It's Natasha Renault with you on BFBS Aldershot. And joining us today, we've got author Damian Lewis. Thank you so much for coming on to BFBS Radio with us.
It's great to be with you.
So for those who haven't come across your latest book, can you tell us what SAS, Daggers Drawn, The Mavericks Who Made the SAS, is all about?
Yeah, so it basically follows SAS Commander Colonel Blair Paddy Maine and his band of warriors as they deploy deep into France following the D-Day landings in Normandy. And basically they're dropped deep behind the lines to carry out these daring sabotage operations to attack rail and road transport to stop the forces of Nazi Germany getting all their reinforcements, their armour and their ammunition and war material to the Normandy beaches to drive the Allies back into the sea. That was their mission, linking up with the French resistance in many cases as a force multiplier. And highly successful they were indeed.
Now, you're a military historian, but you're also a former war reporter. So do you find that your experience interacting with military personnel has helped bring your stories to life?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've been obviously on the front line and even behind enemy lines with various militaries and sometimes not with, you know, the military units of nations, but, you know, with rebel groups, etc., as one does as a war reporter. So, yeah, I've seen war in all its forms, and I know what it's like to be in harm's way and that brotherhood that you forge with those men and women on your shoulder. So, you know, all those things, I can sit down, you know, with veterans and relate to exactly what they're saying because I've been there myself, and I think that's a huge advantage. I mean, you know, whether that be World War II veterans or modern day veterans, we speak the same language, have very similar experiences, and you know, and can relate to each other. I think it's really helpful. It brings a reality and a realism to the writing.
How do you get your inspiration and choose what stories to tell? Because this is part of a series of books.
There's no science to the process. It's very inexact. It's kind of almost instinctive. I mean, these three books, so SAS Brothers in Arms, SAS Forged in Hell, and SAS Daggers Drawn, you know, they chronicle Paddy Maine and David Stirling, the originals, the birth of the SAS in the first book. The second book is Italy, and the third book is the march into France and then the drive to Berlin and Nazi Germany itself. Those books came about because I was actually invited by the family of Blair Paddy Maine to their home in Newton Ards in Northern Ireland to look through and study the family archive, this incredible material that Paddy Maine had spent 5 years collecting behind enemy lines, you know, diaries, war diaries, reports, signals, photographs, film, undeveloped film, actual war booty that he brought back from North Africa or Italy or Nazi Germany, wherever it might be. So that was an incredible opportunity and an incredible experience. I mean, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, really, for a historian. You know, this is arguably the most highly decorated British soldier from the Second World War. Certainly, one could say our greatest frontline soldier, you know, who commanded the SAS for most of the war, ensured the SAS's survival because so many of those on high really didn't like them and wanted to disband these raiders of the thug variety, as they named them. You know, that's where those three books came about, from that kind of serendipitous invitation. And they had asked me there to see if there might be one book telling, you know, Paddy Maine's true story. And actually, there was so much material there, it ended up being three. So, you know, it's an inexact process and one is on a journey and, you know, you don't know where that journey is going to start, the middle or the end. But, you know, it seems to kind of find its own process in its own shape and form.
And you are a best-selling author and your book, Churchill's Secret Warriors, that has actually been turned into a Guy Ritchie film, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. What does it mean to you that people are learning about military history through these books?
I think it's really important. You know, look, I don't want to put too much of a downer on things, but we are living in a very, very insecure world at the moment. You know, we have a war waging in Europe, and I, for one, never imagined in my lifetime that I would see scenes of warfare in Europe, which are so reminiscent of the Second World War, you know, whole cities being blasted into ruin, you know, massed ranks of armour, you know, in combat across the the plains of Ukraine. You know, those scenes I thought I'd never see in my lifetime, certainly after the Second World War and the First World War, certainly after thinking, believing we had learned the lessons of those terrible conflicts. Well, we obviously haven't. So we have to keep reminding ourselves, you know, what are the lessons to be learned from the First and Second World War? And, you know, we have to remind ourselves that freedom is a precious thing and has to be fought for. We have to be willing to fight for freedom. And that requires us having a robust, properly manned and properly financed armed services that we respect and we rely on. You know, that military compact is so crucial. And we have taken our eye off the ball. We really have. You know, the budget to the military has been derisory, and it's long overdue that needs addressing. So for all those reasons, it's really important to keep reminding ourselves of those lessons from history so that we do not forget them, and that we understand that these things that are so precious to us, our way of life, can be cherished and preserved. And to do that, we need to be ready to defend ourselves when necessary.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Your books, they tell us the history, but it's taking those lessons and learning from it. And last year, you came to Aldershot Garrison for an author talk at the Prince Consort's Library, which was a military audience only. So what was that like, and what was their response?
Fabulous event, actually. At Prince Consort's Library is a lovely, lovely venue. I hope to be back there soon. I was actually talking to a large extent about what we've just been discussing, you know, and I was talking specifically about our elite forces, you know, and making the point that they're the tip of the spear. They are this incredible brand that Britain has, whether it be the Parachute Regiment, the Royal Marines, the SAS, the Special Forces Support Group, or numerous other units within that stable. They are this incredible brand we have. And, you know, it's a brand that needs to be polished and cherished and encouraged and preserved. And while we cannot expect or presume that our elite forces can be everywhere in the world where they might be required, just the very thought, the very idea that these kind of individuals might come after you, were if you were a terrorist or a rogue nation stepping out of line, just that sense that that might be a possibility, that deterrent is really, really important and really, really vital. And these are the organizations, these are the units that we depend upon to think laterally, to think the unexpected, to do the unexpected, to attack our enemies, whether that be terrorists or rogue states, in ways that they do not imagine as being possible or cannot conceive, so that we strike them by surprise and we strike them in a way that can secure success. That's the lessons that we take from the Second World War, from the birth of these units. That was where they developed and perfected these kinds of means of operations to do the kind of operations behind the lines that the enemy never conceived of, were completely unthinkable to them, and therefore came as an utter surprise and were not defended against and were so successful. That's something that it's really important to keep carrying forward today. And that was what I was talking about to a large extent at the Prince Consort's Library. And to the audience there, you know, it was very well received, because that's the message they want to hear.
You actually have another author talk coming up. This time it's not just for a military audience, it's for everybody. You're going to be at the Farnham Literaries Festival. So what's your schedule for the night?
So I'll be talking about SAS Daggers Drawn, the third in the Blair Paddy Mayne SAS wartime trilogy. In particular, I'll speak to a certain extent about Operation Gaff, because it's such an incredible mission. And it was an SAS operation launched in the summer of 44, where basically the SAS in the field, believe it or not, discovered the location of Field Marshal Erwin Rommel's headquarters. So, of course, he was the commander of the Africa Corps in a North African desert campaign. But by this time in summer 44, he was commanding the Northern Front in France. So he was the German commander in charge of the Normandy defences. He was the key person that we were up against. And the SAS in the field parachuted into the Morvan part of France, had discovered the location of his headquarters in a chateau set to the northwest of Paris. And so they parachuted in a six-man team to, and their orders were to kill, or ideally kidnap and bring to Britain, Erwin Rommel, because they believed it would be such an incredible propaganda coup to get him to Britain, which it would have been. But not only that, taking Rommel out of the equation would have had such a key impact upon the war at that moment. And bear in mind, you know, the Normandy landings initially had gone very well, getting our men and material ashore, and seizing the beachheads have been very successful. But from there, the breakout that had been expected to happen rapidly had become very, very, very bogged down. So we needed something to break that en passe. And killing Erwin Rommel or capturing him, kidnapping him and bringing him to Britain was seen as the way to do so. So that team, that six-man team, that codenamed Operation Gaff, were parachuted into France just outside of Paris with that mission in mind to go and either kill, assassinate Erwin Rommel, or kidnap him and bring him to Britain. And how would they have kidnapped him and brought him to Britain? Well, the Special Operations Executive, Churchill's Ministry for Gendarmerie Warfare, this organisation that he set up to do all the things you're not allowed to do, strictly speaking, at a time of war, they had already been flying into France, Nazi-occupied France and wider Nazi-occupied Europe, agents of the SOE by these light Lysander aircraft with a very good short takeoff and landing capability. So they've been doing that for months and months and months. So flying in a Lysander to collect Erwin Rommel from a remote French farmer's field would have been pretty much child's play for the SOE. So that was the idea behind Operation Gaff. That's the first thing I'll be talking about in the talk. But I'll go right on through the war and talk eventually about the SAS and the drive into Nazi Germany itself, where the war became very brutal and very bloody and bitter because, of course, the brainwashed German population, brainwashed by years and years of Nazism, brainwashed in a way that we can't even conceive. And there are things in the book which are really shocking. You had, 14-year-old boys from the Hitler Youth movement lining up to defend the Nazi homeland. You had the Volkssturm, the old men in the Home Guard doing the same, and everybody else in between. So it was that was a part of the war where there are very few prisoners taken on either side. And the SAS role was absolutely critical because they were tasked to serve as, believe it or not, at the tip of the spear and basically act as kind of pathfinders for the armoured divisions which were driving into Nazi Germany. So it takes it right the way through to the end of the war.
Really interesting topics that you're going to be discussing at the Farnham Literary Festival. And, budding authors are going to probably come and get some tips from you, perhaps historians that are interested in military history. But have you got any tips for someone in the military wanting to become an author?
Probably my tip would be don't. Well, why do I say that? Well, no, my tip would not be don't. That's not fair. My tip would be don't give up the day job until you can make a living as an author. That would be my tip. Very, very serious about that because, yes, it's very, very easy to self-publish a book on all these platforms that are available. But to be frank with you, most of them sell very few copies and disappear. It's very, 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 very rare that a debut author with a book put out on a self-published platform breaks through. So, key to actually being successful, I think the first thing is you write about what you know. We've talked about it earlier. I know war, so I write about war. It's as simple as that. I think you need to write about what you know. So if you're a former soldier, write about what you know. In particular, if you're a former soldier and you have experience of being in the military, which are, dramatic and the kind of stories people want to read, those are the kind of things you should focus on. And if you're not telling a true story, a non-fiction, if you want to tell a fiction, then again, write about what you know. Turn your real life experiences into a fiction, into a thriller, whatever it might be, that might, get you over the line. So those would be my very simple suggestions.
Well, Damien, thank you so much for joining us on BFBS, the Forces Station. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much. Talk to you again.
BFBS, the Forces Station.